This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening, TSN1290.ca. Good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleague Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus is on loan to us from Rick Ralph and the Rona Roundtable. Our usual colleague, Richard Pollock, is away this week. He'll be back Saturday afternoon, with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website is www.IllegalCurve.com. Coming up on this evening's program in about 30 minutes' time from NHL.com, he's a writer for that fine website, Corey Massasak is going to join us at the top of the next hour. He's going to be doing color commentary on many Jets games this year here on this fine station. You know him from our coverage of the Winnipeg Goldeyes. Paul Edmonds is going to join us to talk about your Winnipeg Jets. Before that, we're going to start with last night's Jets-Oilers game. Ezra, first of all, good evening. Good to see you. How are you?
Yeah, good evening. Good to see you and Remo as well. I'm excited to get NHL Midweek kicked off.
Yeah.
It's been 4 or 5 months since our last midweek.
No, not that long.
3 months?
About 3 months.
Something like that.
Yeah. Generally, the base, when the hockey season, when the Goldeyes season kicked up into high gear is when we sort of drew down on NHL Midweek. But like you said, it is very good to be here this Wednesday and every Wednesday throughout the hockey season on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
What an opening night for the Winnipeg Jets. I think there were a lot of people that were on the verge of a heart attack after that second period with the Jets down 2 goals, but the way they responded was really impressive. And you heard Jacob Trouba on HNL about an hour ago, and what a performance. He gets the first star. Everybody was aware of how good he was, but I think that maybe more people outside of Winnipeg are aware of how good he was, because he's a lot more mature than his age would indicate. Watching that game, I don't think you forget that he's 19 years old, but you perhaps forget how hard it is to be a 19-year-old defenseman, let alone a 19-year-old defenseman that's playing 25 minutes and who's on the ice with less than a minute to go trying to shut down the other team's top player. So I was, you know, beyond surprised and excited and happy with the way he played, and I don't think there are many people in Winnipeg, at least, that are disagreeing with that today.
I would agree with everything you just said, and we'll talk more about the defensive side, the defense group of the Winnipeg Jets coming up in the next segment. Want to start by looking at the forward group last night, and you know, we talked throughout the entire preseason and the entire training camp about the forwards, and we knew that Ladd, Little, and Wheeler were going to be, you know, together, you know. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And, you know, it's pretty clear to most people that that line works well and that line has good chemistry. But the debate all training camp was about Scheifele versus Jokinen, Jokinen versus Scheifele. And Scheifele obviously won the job coming out of training camp. And he proved, I think, to me at least, that really beyond a shadow of doubt, he is going to be the second line center for this team, barring something unforeseen for the rest of the year. He just proved to me that he looked like he belonged. Now, I know it's not against the greatest defensive team in the NHL, in the Edmonton Oilers, and I know it's only one game and we shouldn't be getting ahead of ourselves, but based on his performance yesterday, I think that Mark Scheifele has really began to even grab that second line center spot, even with a firmer, tighter grip than he had before.
It's one game, Drew. And even though it's one game, he played really well. His goal was beautiful. And we know that Mark Scheifele has unbelievable offensive talent. He's put up big-time offensive numbers for the Barrie Colts for years now. And it was evident, you know, when the Jets decided to send him back last year, that this was going to be the year that they truly gave him a shot, you know, in the NHL. But for him to stay at second line center, he's going to have to do that not just once, not just twice. He's going to have to do that on a night in, night out basis. And he looked very good. He looked like he was more confident in his game. I didn't think he had a very good preseason. A couple of years ago, as an 18-year-old, he came in and he looked more confident than he was in the preseason. And he's put on the weight. We all know that, training with Gary Roberts. But in last night's game, he had chemistry with Devin Setoguchi and Evander Kane, absolutely.
I thought
they looked good. He got the goal, but aside from the goal, he had a strong game.
He had a presence even when he wasn't necessarily putting the puck in the back of the net. And I mean, we know he got his goal, and it was on the off wing and a good shot, and it was probably tipped a little bit, and it fooled Devan Dubnyk. But you noticed him throughout the entire game, and I think that's what a better sign almost than the goal itself is, that he wasn't going to go invisible in the course of the 60 minutes. Whereas so many times last year, whomever was playing second line center for the Jets, and that was usually Jokinen, but whomever was playing it was just invisible. And so it was Kane and nobody else on the line. Another aspect of the game last night that I thought was very important for Winnipeg Jets fans is that last year the scoring relied on Ladd, Little, Wheeler. If Ladd, Little, Wheeler weren't clicking at all cylinders, if they weren't totally into the game, playing at the peak of their abilities, the Jets almost stood no chance of winning. Last night, Brian Little's goal notwithstanding, I thought that line was okay. I didn't think that they were anything overwhelming. I didn't think they were anything to write home about. But the fact that they were okay and the Jets were able to get supplemental scoring from the second line, from Scheifele, and we know what Frolik did, and we got the goals from the back end as well. The fact that the Jets were able to get secondary scoring is something that you haven't been able to say for the first 2 years that the Jets have been back in Winnipeg, and I think that is a sign of at least I'm not saying it's going to be a playoff team, but they're at least going to be a better team as a result.
I think you're absolutely correct. Secondary offense for the Winnipeg Jets for the first year and a half that they've been back has been very spotty. It hasn't been consistent, and you've had a collection of different wingers and centers. Evander Kane's kind of been the staple there, but you've had a whole bunch of different centers playing that role, whether it was a Kyle Wellwood or Nick Antropov, and now you see a second line that it looks like will be pretty, pretty written in stone there. And everything last night seemed to happen right as far as the offense went. You got some offense from the defense. You had Michael Frolik getting the winning goal. You had, obviously, Scheifele scoring. Little got the second goal to put them ahead early in the game. But that's what you're going to need. Now, that's not going to happen every game. But one of the main keys for this team is that secondary offense, in addition to the way the team shows a greater commitment to offense. But it wasn't something that you noticed yesterday, that the second line was really the most consistent line. And, Andrew Ladd and Blake Wheeler didn't get on the score sheet. Maybe that wasn't their best game. I'm not worried about that at all.
No, I'm not worried about it.
The second line was able to contribute in a big way, and that's a positive sign. And, even though it's one game, I've said all along throughout the summer that I do think the second line this year is better, because the second line, like I said, over the last year and a half hasn't been really anything to count on, because there have been a cast of characters coming in and out of those lines, and you just can't have that. If you're going to be a playoff team, you need a set top six forward group that is going to contribute. So, hey, we're getting really excited. Everybody woke up today and Jacob Trouba got the first star and everybody was happy.
Sure.
And they should be.
But you're right. We're not going to get ahead of ourselves and plan the parade route, but you're right. It's one game and we should, sort of take a step back and make sure we acknowledge it's only one game.
Right. But you've added a guy who scored 20 goals in Florida, and Frolik, who's won the Stanley Cup. He's a good penalty killer. I mean, these moves were good moves. And Setoguchi is a guy who's a three-time 20-goal scorer, and you can say what you want, whether he is a 20-goal scorer this year, the only time will tell, but it was an improvement over kind of the patchwork guys that they had over the first couple of years, because they inherited guys from Atlanta, and they had to basically deal with what they had.
It's an NHL team now. And, I mean, with all due respect to the guys who played here through the first 2 years, a lot of those guys were, they're not in the league anymore, and they're not in the league anymore for a reason. They weren't really, truly NHLers on a good team.
They did the best that they could, but, for example, Nick Antropov, Kyle Wellwood, and Antti Miettinen, you don't find them on an NHL roster. That tells you something. And Chevy did his best acquiring guys off the waiver wire or through the UFA market. But he decided not to sign them and decided to acquire guys via trade. And then some other guys through free agency, Halischuk and Party, but those guys are more so depth guys. Neither of those guys played yesterday.
But the moves
addressed issues. You can't say that Chevy didn't address those issues. You could maybe argue that he should have maybe got one more defenseman or one more forward. But that wasn't for lack of trying.
Let me go further on that point. You mentioned Halischuk and you mentioned Party, and I mean, I didn't understand the Party signing when it happened, and I don't understand it today. But you know, if that signing had happened last year or 2 years ago, those guys would automatically be given it would be in the top six, or they would have been in the top 12. Instead, they're now the depth guys. So the guys who are fringe NHLers are no longer playing really big minutes for you anymore. I don't think anybody would, nobody's going to say that, Michael Frolik isn't a bona fide NHLer. Whenas in the last couple of years on our third line, we had guys playing roles that they just didn't have the skill set for anymore. And I think that's largely one of the big differences between this Jets team and the Jets teams from the last couple of years. I don't know that it's going to be enough to propel them into the playoffs. On Saturday, both Richard and I predicted that the Jets would still fall short. You predicted that they would make it in there. But we all agree that I think they're going to be right on the cusp. They're going to be right on the fringe. And even more so, even more deserving to be in that spot than they have been the last couple
of
years.
And as far as the couple of guys that they picked up that played last night, Frolik and Setoguchi, those guys are on the last years of their contracts. So it's not guaranteed that either of those guys are going to be part of the core with Ladd, Little, Wheeler, Kane, Shifley, these guys. But if you look at the way Frolik has played, and it's very early, one game, you can't get much more early than that unless it's preseason. He's a guy that could get a 3 or 4 year contract. We know that he's a lifelong friend of Pavlik. He seems to like playing in Winnipeg. And we'll have to wait and see towards the end of the year if he decides to put his name on a contract. But it's quite possible. And that means that there's another piece of the puzzle that the Jets don't have to worry about next year, because there are still holes, and I think you want to talk about them, because the way the team played defensively still left something to be desired last night.
Well, let's leave it at that point in time. When we come back, we're going to talk about the team's defense, the back end, the goaltending, more on last night's game between the Jets and the Oilers in Edmonton. You're listening to TSN 1290 online at tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca, if you want to listen to us online. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Ezra Ginsberg is the man on my left. Michael Remus is on the other side of the desk. He's the producer, gets us on and off the air. Richie Pollock is away. He'll be back Saturday, 12 noon, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Ezzy, a little bit more on last night's Jets-Oilers game. And I want to start with Andre Pavlik's performance, because we know that there's been a lot of talk about Andre Pavlik throughout the course of this offseason and the training camp and what the Jets need out of Andre Pavlik. And last night, four goals is obviously too many goals to give up. Nobody's going to say that the Jets are going to win games if he gives up four goals. I thought he played pretty well, despite giving up four goals. I thought, the goals were, for the most part, good shots, or the first goal that went in off Jim Slater's stick was a little bit fluky. And those things are going to happen. You know the kind of performance it reminded me of, though? Sort of a 1980s Grant Fuhr performance, especially apropos because it was in Edmonton. Grant Fuhr was known as a guy who would give up some softies and give up some bad goals. And when he was on the Oilers in the 80s, it wasn't unusual for the Oilers to give up four goals in the course of a game. But they knew that as they were battling back, or as they were getting closer and closer into the crunch time of the game, Grant Fuhr would always come up with the big saves when they really mattered. Now, I'm not saying Andre Pavlik's Grant Fuhr, because frankly, that would be crazy, and he's not Grant Fuhr. But I sort of had that remembrance sort of jumped to my mind, especially, late in the third period. I think it was on the power play. Mark Arcabello wide open in the slot, and Pavlik comes up with that big save, maintains the Jets' one-goal lead, which they obviously ended up winning by that one-goal margin.
The biggest difference probably between Andre Pavlik and Grant Fuhr being that Grant Fuhr didn't have to be very good in order for the Oilers to win. Andre Pavlik will have to be good in order for the Jets to win.
Obviously.
And he was a difference maker in that third period. And if you want to find a silver lining in him letting in four goals, it's that he made the saves when they counted most. You mentioned the Arcabello save, and that was a big save. And he made, I think it was 14 or 15 saves in that third period. And Pavlik, you can't really fault him for too many of the goals. The first goal was a deflection, and I think at one point they gave it to Brown, and Gazdik ended up getting it. And as you said, it probably ended up going off of Slater. It was a pretty garbage style goal.
Sure,
but he made the saves when they mattered. And you talk about Mark Scheifele and Jacob Trouba being under the microscope. Andre Pavlik is under the microscope as well. This is the second year of a five-year contract. Last year, he played 44 out of 48 games, and on many nights, he was the Jets' best player. On many nights, he struggled, and many nights, he let in way too many goals, and conditioning appeared to be a factor there. But he's going to have to be better, and we know he's not in the same echelon, that upper echelon of goaltenders like Henrik Lundqvist or Jonathan Quick, but Pavlik is still young in this league. And I think he has it in him to be a better goaltender. And yeah, he was good last night. And the Jets, for all of the heroics with Jacob Trouba and Michael Frolik, I mean, it was a one-goal game, and they had to come back down from two goals. So Pavlik gave them a chance to win.
Yeah.
And back to the comparisons to, you know, a guy like Grant Fuhr, who in the high-flying 80s would let in four or five goals and still win. Claude Noel doesn't want to see that that much this year. He would rather see 3-1 rather than 5-4, but he was good.
As a hockey fan, I mean, and I think you'll agree with me on this one. As a hockey fan, if they went back to the high-flying 80s, I'd be over the moon excited. For all the warts that were on yesterday's game, and it wasn't the prettiest performance I've ever seen, but I'll tell you what, it was a ton of fun.
It was a lot of fun.
How much fun was that game?
It was a lot of fun, and the Jets don't have the offense to be a Pittsburgh or a Washington, so they don't want to play that style. The type of defense that sometimes we see from the Winnipeg Jets lends itself to that style, and some of the guys that they have on their team can really get them out. We saw that quite a bit last year, in fact, that the Jets could come back from a couple goals deficits, and they did that even in the first year. But the silver lining in a high-scoring game is that Pavlik still ended up making 34, 35 saves, mm-hmm. whatever it was at the end there.
And he made crucial saves when he had to.
Exactly, and that's what's important. And if you ask him, he only cares about the 2 points. And early on in the season, that's all you care about. But I think if you had to grade him, I don't think you'd give him an A because, you know, he still let in four goals. I think you'd still give him a respectable B, just because he ended up playing so well in that third period. So for me, the goaltending wasn't really something that was making me bite my nails. It was more so the defense. I look at the goal that Alex Hemsky scored in the second period.
Yeah.
And
well,
that
you know,
was
that put
was,
a body on the guy.
That was the old kind of Jets that we saw, where it was just too easy to get into the defensive zone. And even though Blake Wheeler fell, and you know, that wasn't really it. It was the way they collapsed. Yeah. And the Jets are going to have to play a tighter style of defense. You just don't see that if you're talking about the Boston Bruins or the Chicago Blackhawks. So for me, and these guys know that, they all said it. Jacob sure. Trouba said it on HNL. They're still not happy with the way they played defense, and they were at times disorganized. And I think that will get better. Klitsam wasn't there, and I do think that Paul Postma was one of the weaker defensemen, and you don't want to just put that all on him, because at times Tobias Enstrom and Dustin Byfuglien didn't look fantastic defensively either. So they got the win, but those are things that you have to be looking at throughout the course of the season, because, you know, we talked about the second line, but the defense and how they perform as a group is just as important.
Well, the defense had 8 points for the Jets last night. I mean, Byfuglien had 3, Trouba had 2, Enstrom had 2, and Bogosian had 1. So anytime you're getting 8 points from 4 defensemen, you're definitely enjoying that offensive production. You know, defensively, they were the same team that we've seen for the last number of years. And, you know, they're going to try to fix it. I don't know if a Leopard can change their spots. You know, that's something we're going to, the time will only tell. I don't have a ton of confidence that they're going to become this amazing shutdown defensively inclined team. You know, as a fan, you know, as a fan of high scoring hockey, I don't necessarily mind that. Can they be successful throughout the you know, 82 games playing that way? I doubt it. Let me ask you this question. It comes to us via Twitter from our good friend Brian Grebe out there in San Francisco. He wants to know, do you expect that the shrunken goalie pads this year, obviously we've heard a lot that the NHL is really going to be enforcing the size of the goalie pads much stricter than they have been the last number of years. Do you expect to see that result in more goals this year?
It's so hard to say. It's so difficult to quantify something like that. And what I mean by that is, I guess at the end of the year, you could just simply look at the total goals scored or the average goals per game and compare it to last year and the old standards for goaltending equipment. But I think it will probably end up being negligible. And I think one of the reasons why it's being put in is not to create more offense. It's because it gives the goaltenders a slight advantage to have a little bit of extra padding. But
You don't think it's because of the just another way for the NHL to sort of artificially be increasing goal scoring? We saw it yesterday. How many penalties yesterday were as a result of defensemen flipping the puck over the glass in their own zone? Three? I mean, was it two or was it three? I don't remember. But I think it's just another way for the NHL to say, you know, we need more goal scoring, and this is a way to do it.
I don't know who thinks that there needs to be more goals in the NHL, or that's a primary concern. I certainly don't. And
what's the most memorable Jets game of the last 3 years? I think the argument could be made. Well, not last night, but I think the argument could be made. It was the 9-8 game in Philadelphia.
I'm not saying that I don't like high scoring hockey. I'm just saying that I think as a league, I don't think that is a concern for me. And if average goals per game goes up 0.2, Drew, are we going to be
No.
Are we going to be happy about that?
No.
I mean, for me, I want to see a competitive game. I want to see offense, but I want to see hitting. I want to see guys working their butts off on all four lines. So I personally don't think that it's going to have a big impact. And I think that the goaltenders are probably in the position where it's not going to affect their game that much. And at the end of the year, we'll have to see if there's any difference. But I would be surprised if it's anything significant.
Okay. I tend to disagree with you on that front. I think that it is going to impact the scoring in the games, at least for the first month until these goalies get used to it. I mean, if you're used to having it's going to affect the goalies who play with bigger pads more so than the guys who've been using reasonably sized pads for this, you know, for the last number of years. But if you're a goalie who's used to really covering up the entire bottom of the net because your pads, you know, are huge, I think you're going to see some inflated numbers. You look at I know it's only one game or it's one day and it's only three games, but to me, there's something a little bit more to it than with the offense we saw in Montreal last night, in Chicago last night, and then the Jets Oilers game last night.
Sure. Yeah. I guess we'll have to leave it there and agree to disagree.
Why don't we do that? We're going to agree to disagree a little bit later on in the show when we begin to discuss the role of fighting in the game. But until then, coming up next, Corey Massasak from NHL.com is going to join us. You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
30 minutes past 6 o'clock, Wednesday evening, NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, the man to my left, fine gentleman that he is, Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus is on loan to us from Rick Ralph and the Rona Roundtable. Trying to get a hold of Corey Massasak from NHL.com. As soon as we do that, we'll bring him to you live here on TSN 1290. Until then, Ezzy, we had a good... for anybody that follows us individually on Twitter, at ICEzzyG, or yours truly, at ICDrew, would have seen that we had I would describe it as a meeting of the minds earlier today regarding the issue of fighting in hockey. It's been the hot-button topic all day long here on TSN 1290, really throughout the entire sporting world, at least the hockey sporting world. It has been the subject of great debate. We all saw what happened last night to George Parros in Montreal. Admittedly, a freak incident. Admittedly, an incident where even as he was wearing a helmet, it still didn't prevent his face from hitting the ice and him being knocked unconscious and having to be stretchered off and to have to spend the night in a Montreal hospital. You don't have to, Ezzy, let me ask you this. You don't have to listen to me because, you know, I'm as entitled to my opinion as you are. You're entitled to, you know, vice versa. And, you know, we probably have an equal knowledge of this game of hockey. But when hockey experts and hockey royalty like Steve Yzerman and Scotty Bowman and Jim Rutherford and Ray Shiro and David Poile all come out and say that the status quo in regards to fighting in the NHL is just no longer good enough, is it time for the NHL to listen to them?
I think so. And I think incidents like last night are not just scary, they're terrifying. George Parros tried to get up last night in Montreal and he couldn't, and you saw that look on his face. And there is an issue in the NHL in regards to fighting, and we've probably had this debate every year since we started doing a Legal Curve over 4 years ago. And incidents like this just seem to bring it back into the spotlight. And it's a hot button issue because it gets hockey fans where they feel it the most. It's one of those issues where you feel that, and it's a big part of the game, even though it's a penalty, but it's something that is kind of accepted, and it goes along with the code in hockey. And the code in hockey is that if you're going to slash someone or you're going to push someone around or you're going to insult someone, you have to really you have to stand up for yourself. And Jacob Trouba was asked that question on HNL about an hour and a half ago. And he said himself he thinks it's a part of the game.
Let me interrupt. Can I interrupt you for a second? There's been a lot of talk, and that's been an argument that a lot of people have made today, is that the players want it in the game. Maybe they do. I have to believe what they say. But
it is part of the game.
Well, okay, fine. I don't know that it has to be part of the game, but right now it is part of the game. What answer do you think the players are going... What player is going to speak honestly on the subject when it's going to cost one of his teammates his job? Phil Kessel in Toronto. If he's asked if fighting is part of hockey, how could he possibly say anything other than yes when he's got Fraser McLaren and Colton Orr, two guys who are making a living really primarily because of their fighting skills next to him? Isn't it sort of the question is being asked and answered before the answer's even been given? How can he answer the question honestly? And I don't blame him for giving the answer of, yeah, it's part of hockey and it needs to be there, because I wouldn't want to stand next to my coworker and say, I think you should be fired.
You'd hope that NHL players are honest. I see where you're going with this. And it's not a question that's easily answered. And it's not just because of the fighters that might be on your team. It's because of the history of hockey and the fighters on other teams. We're at a breaking point because of the fact that hockey is evolving. And I don't think it's a coincidence that one of the rules that was implemented prior to the season was not being able to take your helmet off. And I think we've made fun of it a little bit over the last couple weeks. And we mentioned the Chris Barch, Brett Gallant fight where they each took their helmets off. And we even saw that yesterday with Mark Fraser and forget who it was.
Travis Moen.
And they actually, for it almost seemed like 10 seconds, they were kind of saying, okay, are we going to take our helmets off together? I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence, because each year there are kind of these little baby steps that are taken to try to discourage people from fighting. But both you and I know, Drew, that if they really want to discourage people from fighting, they're going to have to fine a guy just for fighting. They're going to have to suspend a guy. Not just give the guy 5 minutes in the box or 10 minutes in the box. You're going to have serious repercussions so that you see fighting decline. And fighting has declined minimally over the years. But, I mean, last night you had 5 fights in one game. Five. Mm-hmm. So we're at a situation where there is something that has to be addressed. And the NHLPA and the NHL have to work together to figure this out and not just, for example, institute a rule where you can't take your own helmet off, well, because that's doing nothing.
Why do they have to work together to do something? If I want to enact a law, I don't currently go to the people who are breaking that law and work collaboratively with them to write a new law. Why can't the NHL? I know the answer is because they don't want to do it. But why shouldn't the NHL just unilaterally say fighting is not allowed? It's not allowed in U.S. college hockey. You don't see it at the Olympics. You don't see it in international hockey, 1987 in Piastny, Czechoslovakia, notwithstanding. You just don't see it in those games, but you see it in the NHL.
To address your first, the arguments, I think, are valid on both sides. You know, you can bring up the Olympics. The Olympics are once every 4 years. The Olympics are not North American hockey. College hockey is not the NHL. And I understand the analogies, and people like to present those. But we're talking about the NHL, and for all intents and purposes, the AHL. We're talking about North American pro hockey. We're not talking about Europe. Sure. We're talking about the NHL.
And we're not talking about any of the goon leagues, Central Hockey Leagues.
So taking that all away, and I see what your point is, the NHL needs to do something then. And I'm someone who wouldn't mind things staying status quo or slightly changing. I would like to see less fighting, and I've said this before on the show, I'd like to see less staged fighting. There's too much staged fighting still. And fights should happen organically if it is going to be a part of the game, because it is part of the game. And this debate might die down a little bit, but it shouldn't, because what has happened in the past with whether it's Todd Bertuzzi ending Steve Moore's career or Max Pacioretty having that really unfortunate incident when he was hit by Zdeno Chara, is that not a lot has changed. And I can guarantee you that this year there's going to be an incident where someone gets knocked out from a hit to the head, or somebody gets hit from behind, or possibly even gets knocked out in a fight, and we're going to have this debate over and over again. And really, the fans and the media can only tweet so much, and we can only argue so much. It has to come from the NHL. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. Now, I think that if you suspend a guy 5 games for fighting, that might be a little extreme. But I wouldn't be that, I guess, against a more severe penalty every time a guy fights. And that could start off with a game. And then if you see that, you're going to see fighting decrease drastically. And again, I think that we won't see that this year. And we might not see that next year.
Do you think that...
But we are starting to... I mean, for the it's getting more and more serious. I mean, first game of the year between Toronto and Montreal, the most storied teams in Canadian history. And that's what everybody's talking about. We're not talking about, you know, Lars Eller's great goal or Tyler Bozak's great goal. We're just talking about the fight more so. And we should be, because someone was seriously injured. I mean, George Parros had to be wheeled off on a stretcher. He has a concussion. And, you know, it's something that needs to be talked about. And until the NHL does something serious about it, I think we're just going to be continuing to talk about it. And I have no problem talking about it, because we, in this room, all love hockey. On this station, we love hockey. But I don't think we want to see someone seriously injured like that every night. And I think the argument for me to use that, that's a freak accident, even though I do believe it was an accident. I think freak accident is a bad word, but it was, again, accident might be a wrong word. Colton Orr didn't intentionally do that. No, that doesn't make it better, but it shows you that it's also something that probably will happen again, and it won't be that long before it happens again.
A freak accident is something that is going to happen once in a million times. This isn't a freak accident so much as this is a perfectly, it's a not surprising end result. You know, we see it at least once, twice, three times a year. And in the grand scheme of, you know, maybe there's 1,000 fights in the course of an NHL season. I don't know what the exact number is. But when something happens year after year after year after year, it can't be considered an accident anymore. It can just be considered a side effect.
See, Drew, for me, everyone has their ideal hockey world. You mentioned the Olympics. Some people want the NHL regular season and playoffs to be like the Olympics.
Yeah.
I don't.
You don't?
I think there's not enough hitting in the Olympics, and the ice surface is different. I don't mind the Olympics. I prefer the North American game. Okay? My point being that in my ideal world, I think you have the odd fight between guys that have a reason to fight because they're policing the other players on the ice, including themselves. That's my ideal world. No stage fighting. What we have right now in the NHL is staged fighting and goons.
Was the fight last night between Chris Thorburn, who's both of our, he's one of our favorites. Was the fight last night between Chris Thorburn and Luke Gazdick a staged fight in your mind?
It wasn't a staged fight in the sense that Thorburn hit Gazdick before the fight. And it wasn't something right off the face-off. Now, if a staged fight, in its pure form, is off of a face-off between two known fighters,
sure.
Everybody knows what a staged fight is.
Sure, we all know.
But no, I don't think it was a staged fight.
Did that Thorburn and Gazdick fight have any impact whatsoever on last night's game?
Again, how do you quantify that or qualify that? Well, I mean, ask the majority of NHLers. Forget the like fighting or don't like fighting argument. Ask players if a fight can give you momentum.
With all due respect.
Hold on.
Okay.
Ask the majority of players if a fight can give them momentum. What are they going to say, yes or no?
I think they're going to say yes, but I don't think they're going to say yes because they truly believe it. I think they're going to say yes because their teammate, the guy who fights, is two lockers over. And if you're saying no, then you're taking that guy out of the league and you're taking him out of a job.
I see your point. I don't agree with your point. Or I don't agree with why that adds to the role of fighting in hockey. I think then you're looking at more of a. You asked me about the role of hockey in a game, and I think now you're talking. Pardon me. You asked me about the role of a fight in a game. Now you're looking at the role of an enforcer in the game as a whole, and I think that momentum is something that is palpable. And it's not quantifiable. But yeah, I think when a team is down and you get in a fight, it can boost a team's energy level or momentum. And again, that is palpable, but it is something that the guys who are playing the game will tell you is a real thing.
Okay, I want to go to break, but I want to ask you this question. You can think about it in the commercial break. What would have given the Jets more momentum yesterday? That Chris Thorburn fight, or if Jacob Trouba had laid out Taylor Hall as he was so close to doing in the third period yesterday? When you come back, we'll answer that question. You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Continuing coverage of NHL Midweek with The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. The man to my left is my colleague, Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus is on loan to us from Rick Ralph and the Rona Roundtable. Before the break, I asked my colleague Ezra the question of what would have given the Winnipeg Jets more momentum. The fight that Chris Thorburn had in last night's game against Luke Gazdick of the Edmonton Oilers, or the hit that Jacob Trouba was very close to, I guess, impacting on Taylor Hall in last night's game.
Right, and it's a good question for the purposes of what's going on in the hockey world and the argument that we're having. I think a big hit can lift the spirits of a team. It can swing the momentum in a hockey game, as can a hockey fight. I think if you are to compare the two, I don't know if I can answer that, because hockey is a flow game. It's a game of emotions. It's not a sport where necessarily the best player on the ice or the two best players on the ice can just go out there and win the game. I mean, look at the Pittsburgh Penguins. If that's what it was all about, then they probably would have beat the Boston Bruins and won the Stanley Cup. Okay, Marc-Andre Fleury wasn't as good.
Sure,
as
I hear
he,
your
as he
point,
could have
though.
Been. But a good hit can set the tone, and we've seen that time and time again in hockey, night in and night out. A guy, especially guys that are more so defensemen or bigger bodies, and they have to do that.
Let me bring it back to Winnipeg, the Winnipeg Jets. Evander Kane is a guy who usually plays his best when he's getting involved physically, when he's mixing it up in the corners, when he's playing with a little bit of an edge. We saw it last night. When he started playing with a little bit of an edge, when there were some scrums after the whistle, that's when Evander Kane was really getting noticed. No one's advocating for Evander Kane to change his style in that sense, but there's a reason why Evander Kane isn't taking fighting majors, and it's because everybody knows it would hurt the team way more than it would help the team if Evander Kane started dropping the gloves and fighting on a regular basis.
I agree, and going back to last segment and what you asked about players not wanting to say that fighting doesn't have a part of the game for fear that they might cost their teammates a job. And for Toronto, it's Colton Orr and Fraser McLaren, both from Winnipeg, by the way. Or if it's Chris Thorburn and Anthony Peluso for the Jets, or, you know, the number of other fighters. And I think it is a valid point, because the fact that these teams dress these guys shows you, increases the chances that there will be a fight in that game. So if you're a guy like Anthony Peluso and you look over and you see, okay, Dallas Eakins is dressing Luke Gazdick, I'm going to probably fight tonight. Or if Claude Noel sees that, that might be the difference between him starting Matt Halaschuk or Anthony Peluso, because of the fact that Eakins is going to start Luke Gazdick. And I think that starts, that's a systemic thing. That's what teams do. Some teams don't like to dress fighters. And for the Toronto Maple Leafs, not only do they dress fighters, they seem to dress more than anybody else, and they seem to lead the league every year.
If Randy Carlyle had two very skilled players at his disposal, maybe they're late-round draft picks who really develop. Maybe they're Detroit Red Wing-esque players who they take in the seventh round, and they turn out to be great players. Do you think he would dress those guys, or would he dress Colton Orr and Fraser McLaren on a game-in, game-out basis?
It's no mistake that he's dressing these guys. I mean, he has his depth chart, I imagine, somewhere in his office, whether it's on a whiteboard or a chalkboard, whatever, or on his computer, and he pencils those guys in to play anywhere from 2 to 5 minutes. Maybe the guys get 7 or 8 minutes. But no, it's no mistake. And sure, if he had more scoring talent, if, you know, you think that, okay, well, why wouldn't he dress guys that are more offensive? Maybe they won't play that much, but maybe they can chip in the odd goal, even, you know, they might only play 10 minutes a game. But it's no mistake that these guys are being dressed. And the fact that they're being dressed shows you that it's a part of the game. You know, fighting gets a 5-minute penalty, but that's a slap on the wrist. I mean, those guys aren't going to play that much anyways, right?
Right. So it's no penalty whatsoever.
If Colton Orr gets a 5-minute penalty, I mean, it's likely that he was going to be sitting on the bench for 5 minutes. That's not a knock against Colton Orr. It's just the truth. He's not going to play that much. He's a fourth liner. Now, if you're a fourth liner like Eric Tangrady, who doesn't fight that much, you're not being dressed for your fighting, but Thorburn is. So, I mean, it's so ingrained, Drew, in hockey, and there are skilled players that can fight, but for the most part, it is guys that are designated heavyweights. And
well, would you rather have a talented fourth line that can score, or a fourth line of fighters?
In today's NHL, I'd like to have a fourth line Yeah, with one or two enforcers, because
really?
The other team is dressing enforcers.
So
that's part of the game.
But I promise you, if your fourth line can skate circles around a team a team with a bunch of enforcers on the fourth line, guess what? Those enforcers won't be there anymore because they can't catch up to the guy who's skating circles around them. So their job as an enforcer to punch somebody in the head. Well, you can't punch somebody if you can't catch them.
Right.
And the puck's in, behind your goalie.
That's a good point.
And so, I mean, that goes to show you that, you know, if the talent was there, these enforcers just wouldn't have a job anymore.
It's quite possible. And if more and more teams stop signing these guys and have the option of dressing them, then I think it is a... It is a copycat effect, and you will see less. If the Devils choose not to sign Chris Bartsch or Cam Jansen, then maybe the Jets don't sign Anthony Peluso because they don't think that he can do anything but pop an odd goal, but most likely he's there to fight. It's quite possible, but again, look at the Boston Bruins. They had one of the best fourth lines in hockey, still do. Danny Pailler, Sean Thornton, Gregory Campbell. Both Thornton and Campbell fight. And they both can score. Campbell more so.
But the good teams
are still doing it.
Let me interrupt you right there. You mentioned the Boston guys. Those guys can fight. But if they didn't...
They do fight.
And they do fight. But they can score. So if you said to those guys, you don't have to fight anymore. You don't have to fight anymore. Those guys would still be useful NHLers. They would still have a role in the NHL because they have talent. And they have skill. At the NHL level.
Well, right, and Chris Thorburn scored a goal in the preseason. He can score goals. He scores nice goals. But his ability to stay in the NHL is significantly diminished if he doesn't fight. I agree with you. I'll agree with you on that one.
But it
continues to be a league that tolerates fighting and has an abundance of guys that are more than willing to fight. If you look at a guy like Gadzik, he scored the first Oilers goal. The guy had no NHL experience. He was a career AHLer. I think he's 25. For the most part, the guy has not produced offensively at any level, junior, anything like that. What does he do? He scores a goal, but he still feels the need to fight Thorburn.
Because he knows what his role is. He knows what his job is.
Right.
And, I mean...
It's not going to change. What I'm saying is, and as long as these guys are dressed and signed, it's going to continue to happen.
Well... And I don't think it's going... I'll tell you what. Okay, let's leave it there. We're going to pick this up a little bit later on in the show. We have Paul Edmonds coming up next. But I do think that there's a point that I don't think it's going to happen for much longer, especially when the hockey royalty that spoke out today keeps on doing so. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
1 hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to NHL Midweek with The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
Welcome to the NHL Midweek Hotline. Our good friend, he's going to be doing the color on the games Friday and Sunday, and he's going to be a new regular here on the TSN 1290, TSN Jets broadcast crew, Paul Edmonds. Paul, good afternoon, buddy. How are you? Paul, are you there? Looks like we may have lost Paul, so we're gonna call him right back. We'll blame Remus for that. Throw him under the bus a little bit later on, right, Ezzy?
Yeah, it's exciting. On the topic, we're gonna have Paul right on. He is such a voice in the sports community. Does such a great job for the Gold Eyes. I can't wait to be listening to him on this station, calling Jets games. I know that he does some calling in Selkirk in the Manitoba Junior Hockey League. He's been on the show before and. I'm excited because I think he has one of the greatest sports voices out there.
Mm-hmm. We're looking forward to him as soon as Remus...
Almost as good as yours, Drew.
Thank you. I appreciate that. As soon as Remus figures out why we don't have Paul... Do we have Paul now? Paul, are you there?
Sorry, gentlemen.
That's okay, Paul. We'll let it slide.
Yeah, no, I got 4G out where I'm at, but for some reason I had a drop call.
Okay, well, you know, like I said, we'll let it slide. We'll just blame your provider, whomever it is. I'm sure it's not Bell, though.
Blame my predecessor.
Okay,
he is
exactly. Sounds like a good plan there.
Yeah.
Paul, we were talking. Obviously, we're going to talk Winnipeg Jets. We'll talk about the last night's Jets Oilers game in a couple of minutes. But wanted to start off with your, you know, you've been around the hockey world for a number of years now. What are your thoughts on fighting in the game at this point?
Well, you know, as you guys were just saying, it's hot button today, and I think for the first time maybe ever, a lot of administrators spoke out against it today, and some guys that have some pretty good weight to their careers, Steve Yzerman being one. You know, obviously, I'll go along with Ezzy, and I'll tell you that for a long, long time, I was a proponent of fighting in the game. I believe in the last couple of years, I've probably softened on that a little bit, and there's a couple of reasons for that, and so I'll explain to you in a minute. Prefacing sort of what I'm going to say is, you know, the days of a Rick Tocchet, Wendell Clark fight in the late 80s, early 90s are long gone. One of the best fights I ever saw was those two guys, and one of the best fights I ever saw at the arena was the last year of the first round of the Jets, and with about four home games left, the building was sold out at the arena, and Philadelphia was in town. The Jets won that game 4-2. I had great seats for it. And Tkachuk fought Eric Lindros. And it was a dynamite fight, and I thought that it changed the complexion of the game and gave the momentum to the Jets in that particular instance. And there's a couple of guys that we would call goal scorers or star players back then. Today, though, you don't see that as much, save for maybe a Milan Lucic that you see from Boston. But what you have now is the guy at the end of the bench that's the 11th forward, 12th forward, whatever he is, and he goes out and fights the other fourth line, 12th or 13th forward. And to me, there's not a lot of passion in it because they haven't played against each other. It's not like you're a left side defenseman and you've been battling for in your division or in your conference against that right winger, and you've developed a bit of a hatred. I don't like to use that word because that emotion's not great, but a disdain for that player, whether he's stuck you or he's beaten you a couple of times to the puck, you've lost some one-on-one battles, or he's mouthed you, you've mouthed him, and then you finally say, enough's enough, let's get at it, okay? That element of the game in fighting doesn't really exist anymore. You have a couple guys that just know their role. They go out there when they're told. They see who they're lining up against, and they drop the gloves and fight. Case in point last night, as we saw with Toronto and Montreal. So, to me, the stage fighting end of it has really lost its luster. I still believe, though, that if it's in the heat of passion, it does have a place in the game for a couple of guys to get out a little bit of anger that they have with each other. They sit for five, and they carry on, and it can swing the game a little bit. But I am becoming less and less of a proponent of fighting the game. The question is, how do you take it out?
Right.
And when do you take it out?
Right, and that leads me to my next question. By the way, I'm not sure, Paul, if you're by a TV right now, but Joffrey Lupul and Braden Schenn just fought, so it's funny that you were making that argument, and a couple of guys who aren't enforcers or heavyweights drop the gloves. So I don't think anybody's surprised that the Toronto Maple Leafs are continuing the trend of fighting. But, you know, you mentioned that you've softened your stance on fighting, and I have as well. I still think it does have a role in the game, but I think when I continue to see incidents like George Parros leaving the game on a stretcher, I think my stance softened. So Rick Ralph mentioned today on the roundtable that possibly you start suspending guys or finding guys who simply get in a fight. Is that the way to go? Or how are we going to... Let's start off with, how do you reduce fighting to start off with?
Well, I think what you do is, it's probably going to have to be that extreme. And I think that we look to junior hockey, particularly Junior A, back in the 80s and early 90s. They had abolished fighting. It was one fight and you were out for the game. It didn't matter when the fight occurred. Now, Hockey Canada softened on that, and they brought it back in, so it's your second fight now in Junior A hockey, at least in Western Canada here now, that will get you an automatic game suspension. And then, of course, there is the 10-minute rule, the last 10 minutes in the third period at Junior A. So, you know, there has been a precedent, not at the NHL or professional hockey level, for it being abolished at levels that maybe feed into professional hockey or the NHL. So you could maybe go back and use that as a bit of a roadmap if you wanted to, but I think it would have to be something extreme where you just say there's no more fighting. If you fight one fight and you're gone out of the game, regardless of what the time is, if it's the first, second, or third period. And I think what you're going to see is, and you guys have brought up another good point, is there enough talent to fill that fourth line that's not going to be a couple of knuckle-draggers and a grinder? Are you going to have some guys that can actually play the game and have a little bit of skill to be able to warrant some fourth-line minutes where the coach wants to put you out there where you're not a liability defensively and maybe you can score a goal or two? So there's a lot of moving parts to this whole thing, but I think that you're going to have to probably, if you're going to eliminate it and abolish it from the game, come down hard on it. It's automatic game ejection, and I think that you'll probably see it decline relatively quickly.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Paul Edmonds. He's going to be doing color on a number of Winnipeg Jets games this coming season here on this fine radio station. Paul, wanted to get more to the skill side of the on-ice game last night. Obviously, Jets with the big victory in Edmonton. You know, to me, what it showed more than anything was that for the first time in 3 years, the Jets sort of have, you know, four bona fide NHL lines as opposed to a piecemeal patchwork team. You know, could it very well be that Michael Frolik on that third line right side, is one of the key catalysts to the Winnipeg Jets' entire season?
He was last night. I'll tell you what, the Jets don't win that game last night unless he scores that goal late in the second period. You know, we always talk, it's been well documented for decades in the game about not giving up a goal early in the period or late in the period. And I just thought that last night, after getting the final result, watching it and seeing that goal, the impact that it probably sent the Jets off into the dressing room for 20 minutes still to play, down by only one, was immeasurable. And certainly getting a goal from a guy that has scored in Florida, more of a checker in Chicago, I think really boisted the fact that the Jets felt that they could come back in that game and that they were really in it. You know, they're buoyed by the fact that I thought Pavlik played excellent last night, and we can talk about that in a second too. But Michael Frolik, I think, will have an impact in both ends of the rink for sure. But I think that on the third line, he will be an upgrade to what they've had in the past in terms of a little bit of offensive production. We saw that last night. No bigger goal for the Jets last night than that third goal that got them within one, because I think that it was the catalyst to mount the comeback.
Paul, we can't not ask you about Jacob Trouba. He was a guest of H&L at live at 5 to 5. He ended up getting the first star, had a goal and assist in his first career NHL regular season game. How impressed were you considering that, A, he's 19 years old, B, he played 25 minutes, C, he was on the second D pairing replacing Grant Clitsam, and D, he was out there when it mattered most with 1 minute to go in the game?
Very impressed, but I think we shouldn't be surprised, because we started to see that toward the tail end of the preseason, didn't we, guys? You know, he was getting a lot of minutes. There was, I think it was the second last game they played in the preseason. He led the team in minutes played. He was out there in power play situations. Now, granted, you know, Bogosian in that game on September 26th wasn't in the lineup, so they're trying to see where Jacob maybe fits in terms of the specialty teams. But, boy, he earned every minute he got last night, and as the coaches said, Charlie Huddy's going to ride the guys that are playing well. And when you throw consistently shift after shift after shift together of good progress, you're going to get those minutes. He's played on the high stages. Rick Ralph was talking about that today. The guys in the morning were talking about that today. Very poised with the puck, very relaxed. He's a big body, skates very well. So, you know, physically he has some God-given tools that not a lot of us have. But I'll tell you what, they really did their homework on this kid, and I think they've got a real solid blue chipper here. He'll be impressive for many, many years to come in a Jets uniform, and I just think that under the tutelage of Zach Bogosian, who kind of knows the drill, you know, he was a teenager when he broke into the league as well. He's got Jacob under his wing. Jacob seems, and he talked about it with Hustler Lawless today, the impact that Charlie Huddy's had and Zach Bogosian on his development and just getting to Winnipeg here has been immeasurable in terms of being able to see how Zach Bogosian conducts his business. But this kid is just a raw talent and a real treat to watch. And I wasn't surprised by the minutes that he got or the situational play that he was put in last night. He gets a goal as well. But, you know, he gets the goal because he steps up and makes a play in the neutral ice to intercept what was, you know, a pretty bad pass. But that's sort of hockey skills and that's hockey smarts, and that's certainly something that you can't teach. That's definitely innate. And I love watching the kid play, even from that first game I saw on TV when they were out in Ontario. And, you know, you just knew he was going to be a treasure. I will say this, though, funny story. Zach Bogosian and Jacob Trouba, who are both Michigan guys, if I could stand corrected, but I think they both are. You know, American guys, they showed up at the ballpark this year, and they took a little bit of batting practice during batting practice in advance of one of the Gold Eyes games in shorts and flip-flops. And let's just say that both of them chose the right sport.
Paul, we got to ask, you mentioned Andrei Pavlik earlier, and when Ezzy and I are at the top of the show, I use the analogy that Andrei Pavlik's game last night was similar to a sort of a Grant Fuhr-style game in the 1980s, whereby he gives up a bunch of goals, but when push came to shove, he was big and made the key saves. You know,
yeah.
Can the Jets survive with an Andrei Pavlik, obviously not giving up four goals a game, but with an Andrei Pavlik that is okay at some points, but when it really matters at the playing above his head?
I think so. And the track record speaks for itself. You know, the first year he was the MVP of the team. Last year, you know, I mean, it's a shortened year. It was a small sample size. But I'll say this to you. The Jets, the moment they pressed the first press conference that Claude had to start training camp, he talked about two things. One, improvement on specialty teams. Number two, improvement on defensive play in their own zone. I think the Jets are going to get better in their own zone as they go along, especially with the minutes that Jacob Trouba is going to command and probably will get. He's a bigger body. He's a little harder to move. He's a lot more physical than some of the other guys they've had back there, you know, Hainsey being one of them for sure. I mean, that really wasn't Hainsey's game. Having said that, though, I will submit this to you, and that is night after night, compare the two goaltenders, Andrei Pavlik against the opposition goaltender, and I bet you 70 to 75 to 80% of the time, you're going to say which one was the better goaltender tonight. It's going to be the Jets guy. Whether they win or not, Andrei Pavlik is usually the better goaltender in the game because I think he's that good.
Paul, the Jets' next game, of course, is on Friday, coming up at the MTS Center. You're going to be doing color on this fine radio station. The LA Kings, not that far removed from, you know, being Stanley Cup champions. What are you expecting? Because that's going to be a much bigger test for the Jets facing a team that was missing two of their top centers.
Well, you know, I think that they're only removed from the Stanley Cup a couple of years here going into this season. They were beaten out by the Stanley Cup champs last year. You know, they didn't have a great regular season, although one would argue 2 years ago they didn't have a great regular season, ended up sort of winning the Stanley Cup as a wild card entry, getting in on the last day or the second last day of the regular season. Well, listen, they've got a lot of talent. They've got a lot of talent up front. They've got a lot of talent on the back end, and they've got a very good goaltender, too. And, you know, I think part of the issue was for them maybe, and they didn't have a whole lot more wins than the Jets had overall last year. With Jonathan Quick comes off of back surgery in the offseason last year, was a little slow to kind of come around. I think they're looking for a better start from him. I'm pretty sure they'll get it. I'm looking forward to seeing just how this sort of Western Conference quintessential team plays against the Jets and vice versa, because you're right, it will be a test for the Jets. You know, right out of the gate, it'll be game number two and number one at home against a perennial Stanley Cup contender. And I think the Jets will answer the bell pretty well. I think that they've had some upgrades. You know, the LA Kings don't really know the Winnipeg Jets either. So I'm sure that it's a little bit of that fear of the unknown from their standpoint. They're coming into a building they haven't played in. It's going to be loud. It's going to be raucous. I think that there should be some respect to the LA Kings based on their head coach and all the players they have and the Kopitars and the 23-year-old Drew Doughty. I mean, he's 23 years old and one of the best defensemen in the league, and the Carters and the Richards and all of that. But the Jets have some pretty good players as well. So I think it lends to a lot of intrigue to how this game's going to be played out, and it might or may not answer any more questions that people have about the Jets in this conference, although it could And if it doesn't, though, there'll be more questions about whether they are truly going to be contender for one of the top eight spots. But it's only game two, but I think that this will be indeed a good litmus test for Winnipeg coming up against a pretty good team.
You'll hear him on Friday night's broadcast as the Jets take on the LA Kings here on TSN 1290. Paul Edmonds, thanks very much for joining us this evening on NHL Midweek.
My pleasure, guys. Just one more thing that I'll always remember about that opener last night. I think it was a harbinger of things to come for the Edmonton Oilers in the third period when the fire alarm was going off in the second period there at Rexall Place.
Thanks very much, Paul. Take care, bud.
Hey, guys. See ya.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
20 minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to NHL Midweek with The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Big thank you to Paul Edmonds for having just joined us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download both on the TSN 1290 website as well as through our iTunes feed. Go to iTunes, search for Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Let's head back to the NHL Midweek Hotline.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
We welcome to NHL Midweek from NHL.com, Corey Massasek. Corey, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
We're doing very well. Thanks very much for joining us this evening. We're obligated to, by law, start with what everybody in the hockey world is talking about, and that's fighting in hockey. We all saw what happened yesterday in Montreal with the incident involving George Parros and everything else, and fortunately it sounds like he's going to be okay. Corey, do you think we're getting close to a sort of a critical mass and where fighting in hockey is on its way out?
I don't think I would say that at this point. I think, anytime there's a scary incident like what happened last night, it seems like, it seems like it's kind of pushes the discussion forward. But I don't know, like the reaction, I feel like most of the reaction that's come from that from last night is very kind of black and white, and it's clearly a gray area. I don't think I'm, stepping out of bounds by saying that I'm not a big fan of the stage fight. I'm still of the mind that, whenever it happens in the heat of the game and if it's sticking up for a teammate or something like that, there's clearly a place for that at this point in time. And obviously there's been all this stuff about how all the players and everybody wants it to remain. But it seems like a lot of the argument that comes after a scary moment like that is very heated and very, like, just, I don't know, it doesn't seem like it's really, I don't know if it really helps. The people are just kind of going by raw emotion. I don't know. I think it's certainly plausible that, someday, that it won't, there's obviously been parts of, certain hits that have been kind of legislated out and things like that, though. But obviously nobody wants to see what happened last night. And, I think there's been little tweaks here and there, the new rule about the helmets and, there's certainly ways that the people are kind of looking to go about, maybe eliminating some of the different types of fights.
Corey, for our listeners who aren't aware, you're based in New York City, and we wanted to talk to you a little bit about some of the teams in the Eastern Conference, and we might as well start off with the New York Rangers. For me, I'm still on the fence whether I think that the New York Rangers are going to be better. I still think they're a playoff team, but there are a lot of question marks for me, and when I see a guy like Chris Kreider, for example, sent down to the AHL, I wonder what the plan is there and what I think of that team. But sticking with the coaching, because that's the biggest change that was made, what kind of impact do you think Alain Vigneault is going to have on this team this year?
Yeah, I think it's certainly going to be the biggest storyline. There's certainly a scenario there where, the team just kind of feels like it's a fresh start, and obviously the things that they didn't like about John Tortorella, Alain Vigneault is, polar opposites almost from that guy. So, it's quite possible that, they'll rip off to a 12-2-2 start, and everybody will be talking about how everyone loves Vigneault, and, the shackles are off, so they're scoring a bunch of goals, and they're not having to try to block every shot, and maybe that'll be the case, or maybe they won't play as good a defense, and they'll struggle. I think top to bottom, I think they've got you know, a top three or top four roster in the Eastern Conference for sure. You know, they're going to miss, I think they're going to miss Carl Hagelin for a while. And I think he's pretty underrated. But, you know, top to bottom, they're pretty good. As long as Lundqvist is healthy, they're, you know, they're one of the best teams in the league. I mean, I think if anything, you know, maybe that was one of Tortorella's biggest issues, especially in the playoffs the past couple of years, is that maybe they didn't kind of, you know, let the horses go a little bit in the playoffs whenever they had more talent than the team that they were playing.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. We're joined by Corey Massasak of NHL.com. Corey, moving across the Hudson River to New Jersey, sort of a two-part question I have for you regarding the Devils. Part one, are you surprised that the Devils aren't going with Martin Brodeur, you know, in terms of the season opening start? It sounds like they're going with Corey Schneider when they open their season on Thursday. And then part two, have the Devils done enough improving their forward group and with the addition of Schneider in net to be a playoff contender, given that their defensive weaknesses on the back end?
I think so. I'll answer that one first. Well, let's put it this way. I'm doing our power rankings, starting, I'm kind of taking over for Dave Lozo in that role, and I have no, I'm basically going to say in the first power rankings on Friday on the site that I have no idea any of those teams beyond. I think Pittsburgh, Washington, and New York are all going to be pretty good. And then those other five teams in that division are, I think any of them could finish in fourth place. And I think any of them could finish in eighth place. That said, I think the Devils could end up being the best team out of that bunch, just because I think, you know, people see that they've lost Parise, they've lost Kovalchuk. But, you know, what they've added a few guys, I think getting Damian Brunner right at the end there, you know, like they're, whenever they're healthy, they're going to have two and possibly three pretty decent lines. Now they're not going to have, like, you know, the dynamic game-breaking stuff that Kovalchuk and Parise have given them in the past. But I think they could be pretty solid. And, yeah, I mean, I think Corey Schneider and Martin Brodeur could be one of the best tandems in the league, especially if Martin Brodeur doesn't have to play 55 or 60 games anymore, which is obviously going to be the case. Now, I think Martin Brodeur had a little bit of something that he was dealing with in camp, typically. And so, I mean, I saw that they mentioned that they maybe wanted to give him an extra day or two. I also think that those two are, at least at the beginning of the season, are going to pretty much have a 50-50 split, and they wanted to give Marty the home game. I mean, I think that was maybe the two reasons that went into that.
Corey, the New York Islanders don't start the season until Friday. They're going to play the Devils, who play the Pittsburgh Penguins on Thursday. I think you'd agree that everybody agrees that the New York Islanders are for real, and especially taking the Pittsburgh Penguins to the amount of games that they did in the first round, even though they lost. They gave the Pittsburgh Penguins a pretty good run for their money. Do you think that they'll continue to take the next step, or do you think that they possibly take a step back? The only thing that I can think of maybe that you would look at possibly taking a step back is Mark Streit has gone to Philly and they haven't really replaced his offense. What do you think? What are you projecting the Islanders to do this year?
Yeah, they're another one of those teams where I feel like it could go in five different directions. I mean, I think people are going to look and see how they played against the Penguins and assume that that's what's going to happen. I mean, I think you remember the Penguins had their first playoff trip where they got their lessons basically from the Senators, but they also played pretty well and then came back, you know, and then the rest was history the following years. I don't necessarily think that's going to happen for the Islanders, but I do think that, you know, they added a couple more guys like Pierre-Marc Bouchard is another one of those guys. I mean, if the biggest strength for Garth Snow is clearly just finding these guys who for cheap, who are able to outperform how much they pay them. And that's kind of the MO on Long Island. And I think he's going to be another guy who is going to fit right in with Molson and Tavares and play well for them. But you're right, the defense is a little suspect now. I mean, Griffin Reinhardt, if he sticks with them and is really good, that could change things for them. They really like Matt Donovan, another kid coming along. I wasn't as surprised about Kreider going back to for the Rangers, actually, as I was that Ryan Strome got sent down by the Islanders. I really thought he was going to stick.
Yeah, me too.
I think they've got, you know, they've certainly got some depth. I mean, I think, you know, the past couple of years before last year, the biggest thing for the Islanders was they had a decent first 18 or 20 guys, but they would have two or three injuries and they were just shot. So I think, they've got three or four options. They've got Anders Lee, who's down in the minors too. I think they're going to get Cal Clutterbuck back eventually. I think they're a little deeper. You know, obviously they've got one of the five or six best players in the world, so that doesn't hurt. I think they're definitely going to be in that group that's fighting for one of the last two or three playoff spots in the East.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by NHL.com writer Corey Massasak. We seem to be, just the way it worked out, focusing most of our attention on the Metropolitan Division. Staying there, moving to the City of Brotherly Love, and as he just mentioned, Mark Strait just got on the board with his first assist for the Islanders to put them up 1-0 over the Flyers, putting them up 1-0 over the Toronto Maple Leafs. Looking at Philly, Corey, we know that their offense is about as enviable as an offense as you can get in the NHL. Do they have enough defense and goaltending to get them into the playoffs, unlike last season?
I find that to be a very weird team, because first off, their offense, their forward group is quite loaded, but they didn't score enough last year. That was actually one of the problems for them. Brizgalov was actually pretty good, and they just didn't score enough at times until all the injuries hit and they just became a mess. So they actually need to score more than they did last year, which I think they can do. But secondly, they went, whatever it was, 30 years going cheap in goal, and they finally decided not to do that and gave all that money to Brizgalov. Well, that didn't work, so now they're back to going very cheap and kind of unproven in goal. We'll see. Steve Mason had a few good games for them last year. Ray Emery had a few good games for Chicago. That could still be an issue for them. And then on defense, I think the cry from Flyers fans is they needed to get younger and faster, and they added Mark Streit and Hal Gill. So I don't know if that really addressed maybe they just decided they needed to get, they just needed better players. And Mark Streit is probably better than two or three of the guys they were running out last year, and Hal Gill has shown that he can still play a little bit. So, and he didn't cost a whole lot of money, which was big for them. So, I think it's very plausible that all these teams, those three teams we just talked about, could finish a point or two away from each other by the end of the year.
Corey, the Washington Capitals lost their first game last night to the Chicago Blackhawks 6-4, and it wasn't the fault of Mikhail Grabowski, obviously. He got a hat trick and picked up an assist, and he's on pace for, 350 points, so it wasn't his fault. But he was one of the big acquisitions that they made. They lost Mike Ribeiro to the Phoenix Coyotes. What is your take on the Washington Capitals this year? Because it was another year where they didn't go to the Stanley Cup Finals. They didn't bring home the hardware. Is there any reason to believe that they're going to be better this year?
Yes, I think so. And it's weird, too, because I've seen a lot of preseason predictions that have felt they're going to go the other way. And there's plenty of reason to believe that, because they had a really weird year last year. I think, if anything, they benefited the most from just the weirdness that of the 48-game season. They started out terrible, but then they had a very soft finishing schedule, and they took advantage of it. And they, for the last 15 or 20 games of the season, they looked like world beaters. But again, who were they actually beating? All those questions. That said, I think Adam Oates is legitimately going to be a great coach in this league. He's one of those guys where you spend a few days around him, and you're just like, man, this guy gets it. He's gonna be really good at this. And I think having a full training camp with them, I think, honestly, having Grabowski and, granted, he played on the fourth line last night and has already complained about his role, but I think Martin Ehret is going to be a good player for them. So I think basically taking the money that they would be spending on Alexander Semin right now and turning that into Grabowski and Ehret kind of, fills a hole that they didn't have filled before, and conversely makes them a little bit deeper. They really like Tom Wilson. I don't know how big of an impact he's going to have, but they're definitely deep up front. They've definitely got three really good defensemen and a whole bunch of who knows on the back, and Braden Holtby is pretty good. So I think that's enough, and the fact that their star players really started playing like star players again last year, I think, you saw even last night Ovechkin, Backstrom, Green, all pretty good. It looked a little bit like they did a few years ago when they would win game 6-4, lose game 6-4, and maybe that's not the worst thing in the world. Maybe they just get back to being that entertaining team that racks up a bunch of points, and then we can all debate whether or not they're going to be good enough in the playoffs again or not.
They certainly would be entertaining. Corey, we'll let you go on this last question. We do it every time we sort of preview a conference or preview a division with a guest. Got to have your predictions for the Eastern Conference, the Western Conference, and your cup winner.
Oh, boy. Who did I say? We just ran ours on our website the other day, and I already forgot. I believe I said, I think the Los Angeles Kings will defeat the Detroit Red Wings in the Stanley Cup final.
You know what? As it happened, we did our predictions on Saturday on the show. That was the exact same prediction I had. So hopefully we'll both be right.
I think if anybody reads the power rankings on Friday, they're going to see that I'm pretty high on Detroit, obviously.
Well, they're up.
One thing's for sure, Corey, wherever the Jets are ranked, I think that we're going to be debating that all day on this station, because anytime a player is ranked by NHL.com, we seem to debate it. So it's going to be fun to have those debates all year.
Yeah, hey, they got off to a good start. And you know what? I actually I got to spend like, you know, maybe just a, I don't know, what, 10 or 15 minutes with Jacob Trouba one day, and actually two different days. And the kid's great. I love just a very personable, just a good kid. And you know what? Yeah, that was about as good of an NHL debut as you could have. So.
And in terms of your predictions, the Red Wings are already up 2-0 on the Buffalo Sabres with 7 minutes to go in the first period in Detroit. Corey Massasak from NHL.com, thanks very much for joining us this evening on NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, anytime. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Corey. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Corey.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
1 hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to NHL Midweek with The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
Welcome to the NHL Midweek Hotline. Our good friend, he's going to be doing the color on the games Friday and Sunday, and he's going to be a new regular here on the TSN 1290, TSN Jets broadcast crew, Paul Edmonds. Paul, good afternoon, buddy. How are you? Paul, are you there? Looks like we may have lost Paul, so we're gonna call him right back. We'll blame Remus for that. Throw him under the bus a little bit later on, right, Ezzy?
Yeah, it's exciting. You know, on the topic, we're gonna have Paul right on. He is such a voice in the sports community. Does such a great job for the Gold Eyes. I can't wait to be listening to him on this station, calling Jets games. I know that he does some calling in Selkirk in the Manitoba Junior Hockey League. He's been on the show before, and I'm excited because I think he has one of the greatest sports voices out there.
Mm-hmm. We're looking forward to him as soon as Remus.
Almost as good as yours, Drew.
Thank you. I appreciate that. As soon as Remus figures out why we don't have Paul. Do we have Paul now? Paul, are you there?
Sorry, gentlemen.
That's okay, Paul. We'll let it slide.
Yeah, no, I got 4G out where I'm at, but for some reason I had a drop call.
Okay, well, you know, like I said, we'll let it slide. We'll just blame your provider, whomever it is. I'm sure it's not Bell, though.
Blame my predecessor.
Okay,
he is
exactly. Sounds like a good plan there.
Yeah.
Paul, we were talking. Obviously, we're going to talk Winnipeg Jets. We'll talk about the last night's Jets Oilers game in a couple of minutes. But wanted to start off with your, you know, you've been around the hockey world for, you know, a number of years now. What are your thoughts on fighting in the game at this point?
Well, you know, as you guys were just saying, it's hot button today, and I think for the first time maybe ever, a lot of administrators spoke out against it today, and some guys that have some pretty good weight to their careers, Steve Yzerman being one. You know, obviously, I'll go along with Ezzy, and I'll tell you that for a long, long time, I was a proponent of fighting in the game. I believe in the last couple of years, I probably softened on that a little bit, and there's a couple of reasons for that, and so I'll explain to you in a minute. Prefacing sort of what I'm going to say is, you know, the days of a Rick Tocchet, Wendell Clark fight in the late 80s, early 90s are long gone. You know, one of the best fights I ever saw was those two guys, and one of the best fights I ever saw at the arena was the last year of the first round of the Jets, and with about four home games left, the building was sold out at the arena, and Philadelphia was in town. The Jets won that game 4-2. I had great seats for it. And Tkachuk fought Eric Lindros. And it was a dynamite fight, and I thought that it changed the complexion of the game and gave the momentum to the Jets in that particular instance. And there's a couple of guys that we would call goal scorers or star players back then. Today, though, you don't see that as much, save for maybe a Milan Lucic that you see from Boston. But what you have now is the guy at the end of the bench that's the 11th forward, 12th forward, whatever he is, and he goes out and fights the other fourth line, 12th or 13th forward. And to me, there's not a lot of passion in it because they haven't played against each other. It's not like you're a left side defenseman and you've been battling for in your division or in your conference against that right winger, and you've developed a bit of a hatred. I don't like to use that word because that emotion's not great, but a disdain for that player, whether he's stuck you or he's beaten you a couple of times to the puck, you've lost some one-on-one battles, or he's mouthed you, you've mouthed him, and then you finally say, enough's enough, let's get at it, okay? That element of the game in fighting doesn't really exist anymore. You have a couple guys that just know their role. They go out there when they're told. They see who they're lining up against, and they drop the gloves and fight. Case in point last night, as we saw with Toronto and Montreal. So, to me, the stage fighting end of it has really lost its luster. I still believe, though, that if it's in the heat of passion, it does have a place in the game for a couple of guys to get out a little bit of anger that they have with each other. They sit for five, and they carry on, and it can swing the game a little bit. But I am becoming less and less of a proponent of fighting the game. The question is, how do you take it out, and when do you take it out?
Right, and that leads me to my next question. By the way, I'm not sure, Paul, if you're by a TV right now, but Joffrey Lupul and Braden Schenn just fought, so it's funny that you were making that argument, and a couple of guys who aren't enforcers or heavyweights drop the gloves. So I don't think anybody's surprised that the Toronto Maple Leafs are continuing the trend of fighting. But, you know, you mentioned that you've softened your stance on fighting, and I have as well. I still think it does have a role in the game, but I think when I continue to see incidents like George Parros leaving the game on a stretcher, I think my stance softened. So Rick Ralph mentioned today on the roundtable that possibly you start suspending guys or finding guys who simply get in a fight. Is that the way to go? Or how are we going to... Let's start off with, how do you reduce fighting to start off with?
Well, I think what you do is, it's probably going to have to be that extreme. And I think that we look to junior hockey, particularly Junior A, back in the 80s and early 90s. They had abolished fighting. It was one fight and you were out for the game. It didn't matter when the fight occurred. Now, Hockey Canada softened on that, and they brought it back in, so it's your second fight now in Junior A hockey, at least in Western Canada here now, that will get you an automatic game suspension. And then, of course, there is the 10-minute rule, the last 10 minutes in the third period at Junior A. So, you know, there has been a precedent, not at the NHL or professional hockey level, for it being abolished at levels that maybe feed into professional hockey or the NHL. So you could maybe go back and use that as a bit of a roadmap if you wanted to, but I think it would have to be something extreme where you just say there's no more fighting. If you fight, one fight and you're gone out of the game, regardless of what the time is, if it's the first, second, or third period. And I think what you're going to see is, and you guys have brought up another good point, is there enough talent to fill that fourth line that's not going to be a couple of knuckle draggers and a grinder? Are you going to have some guys that can actually play the game and have a little bit of skill to be able to warrant some fourth line minutes where the coach wants to put you out there where you're not a liability defensively and maybe you can score a goal or two? So there's a lot of moving parts to this whole thing, but I think that you're going to have to probably, if you're going to eliminate it and abolish it from the game, come down hard on it. It's automatic game ejection, and I think that you'll probably see it decline relatively quickly.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Paul Edmonds. He's going to be doing color on a number of Winnipeg Jets games this coming season here on this fine radio station. Paul, wanted to get more to the skill side of the on-ice game last night. Obviously, Jets with the big victory in Edmonton. You know, to me, what it showed more than anything was that for the first time in 3 years, the Jets sort of have, you know, four bona fide NHL lines as opposed to a piecemeal patchwork team. You know, could it very well be that Michael Frolik on that third line right side is one of the key catalysts to the Winnipeg Jets' entire season?
He was last night. I'll tell you what, the Jets don't win that game last night unless he scores that goal late in the second period. You know, we always talk, it's been well documented for decades in the game about not giving up a goal early in the period or late in the period. And I just thought that last night, after getting the final result, watching it and seeing that goal, the impact that it probably sent the Jets off into the dressing room for 20 minutes still to play, down by only one, was immeasurable. And certainly getting a goal from a guy that has scored in Florida, more of a checker in Chicago, I think really, really boisted the fact that the Jets felt that they could come back in that game and they were really in it. You know, they're buoyed by the fact that I thought Pavlik played excellent last night, and we can talk about that in a second, too. But Michael Frolik, I think, will have an impact in both ends of the rink for sure. But I think that on the third line, he will be an upgrade to what they've had in the past in terms of a little bit of offensive production. We saw that last night. No bigger goal for the Jets last night than that third goal that got them within one, because I think that it was the catalyst to mount the comeback.
Paul, we can't not ask you about Jacob Trouba. He was a guest of H&L at live at 5-5. He ended up getting the first star, had a goal and assist in his first career NHL regular season game. How impressed were you considering that, A, he's 19 years old, B, he played 25 minutes, C, he was on the second D pairing replacing Grant Clitsam, and D, he was out there when it mattered most with 1 minute to go in the game?
Very impressed, but I think we shouldn't be surprised, because we started to see that toward the tail end of the preseason, didn't we, guys? You know, he was getting a lot of minutes. I think it was the second last game they played in the preseason. He led the team in minutes played. He was out there in power play situations. Now, granted, you know, Bogosian in that game on September 26th wasn't in the lineup, so they're trying to see where Jacob maybe fits in terms of the specialty teams. But, boy, he earned every minute he got last night, and as the coaches said, Charlie Huddy's going to ride the guys that are playing well. And when you throw consistently shift after shift after shift together of good progress, you're going to get those minutes. He's played on the high stages. Rick Ralph was talking about that today. The guys in the morning were talking about that today. Very poised with the puck, very relaxed. He's a big body, skates very well. So, you know, physically he has some God-given tools that not a lot of us have. But I'll tell you what, they really did their homework on this kid, and I think they've got a real solid blue chipper here. He'll be impressive for many, many years to come in a Jets uniform, and I just think that under the tutelage of Zach Bogosian, who kind of knows the drill, you know, he was a teenager when he broke into the league as well. He's got Jacob under his wing. Jacob seems, and he talked about it with Hustler Lawless today, the impact that Charlie Huddy's had and Zach Bogosian on his development and just getting to Winnipeg here has been immeasurable in terms of being able to see how Zach Bogosian conducts his business. But this kid is just a raw talent and a real treat to watch. And I wasn't surprised by the minutes that he got or the situational play that he was put in last night. He gets a goal as well. But, you know, he gets the goal because he steps up and makes a play in the neutral ice to intercept what was, you know, a pretty bad pass. But that's sort of hockey skills, and that's hockey smarts, and that's certainly something that you can't teach. That's definitely innate. And I love watching the kid play, even from that first game I saw on TV when they were out in Ontario. And, you know, you just knew he was going to be a treasure. I will say this, though, funny story. Zach Bogosian and Jacob Trouba, who are both Michigan guys, if I could stand corrected, but I think they both are. You know, American guys, they showed up at the ballpark this year, and they took a little bit of batting practice during batting practice in advance of one of the Goldeyes games in shorts and flip-flops. And let's just say that both of them chose the right sport.
Paul, we got to ask, you mentioned Andre Pavlik earlier, and when Ezzy and I are at the top of the show, I use the analogy that Andre Pavlik's game last night was similar to a sort of a Grant Fuhr-style game in the 1980s, whereby he gives up a bunch of goals, but when push came to shove, he was big and made the key saves. You know,
yeah.
Can the Jets survive with an Andre Pavlik, obviously not giving up four goals a game, but with an Andre Pavlik that is okay at some points, but when it really matters at the playing above his head?
I think so. And the track record speaks for itself. You know, the first year he was the MVP of the team. Last year, you know, I mean, it's a shortened year. It was a small sample size. But I'll say this to you. The Jets, the moment they pressed the first press conference that Claude had to start training camp, he talked about two things. One, improvement on specialty teams. Number two, improvement on defensive play in their own zone. I think the Jets are going to get better in their own zone as they go along, especially with the minutes that Jacob Trouba is going to command and probably will get. He's a bigger body. He's a little harder to move. He's a lot more physical than some of the other guys they've had back there. Hainsey being one of them for sure. I mean, that really wasn't Hainsey's game. Having said that, though, I will submit this to you, and that is night after night, compare the two goaltenders, Andre Pavlik against the opposition goaltender, and I bet you 70 to 75 to 80% of the time, you're going to say which one was the better goaltender tonight. It's going to be the Jets guy. Whether they win or not, Andre Pavlik is usually the better goaltender in the game because I think he's that good.
Paul, the Jets' next game, of course, is on Friday, coming up at the MTS Center. You're going to be doing color on this fine radio station. The LA Kings, not that far removed from, you know, being Stanley Cup champions. What are you expecting? Because that's going to be a much bigger test for the Jets facing a team that was missing two of their top centers.
Well, you know, I think that they're only removed from the Stanley Cup a couple of years here going into this season. They were beaten out by the Stanley Cup champs last year. You know, they didn't have a great regular season, although one would argue 2 years ago they didn't have a great regular season, ended up sort of winning the Stanley Cup as a wild card entry, getting in on the last day or the second last day of the regular season. Well, listen, they've got a lot of talent. They've got a lot of talent up front. They've got a lot of talent on the back end, and they've got a very good goaltender, too. And, you know, I think part of the issue was for them maybe, and they didn't have a whole lot more wins than the Jets had overall last year. With Jonathan Quick comes off of back surgery in the offseason last year, was a little slow to kind of come around. I think they're looking for a better start from him. I'm pretty sure they'll get it. I'm looking forward to seeing just how this sort of Western Conference quintessential team plays against the Jets and vice versa, because you're right, it will be a test for the Jets. You know, right out of the gate, it'll be game number two and number one at home against a perennial Stanley Cup contender. And I think the Jets will answer the bell pretty well. I think that they've had some upgrades. You know, the LA Kings don't really know the Winnipeg Jets either. So I'm sure that it's a little bit of that fear of the unknown from their standpoint. They're coming into a building they haven't played in. It's going to be loud. It's going to be raucous. I think that there should be some respect to the LA Kings based on their head coach and all the players they have and the Kopitars and the 23-year-old Drew Doughty. I mean, he's 23 years old and one of the best defensemen in the league, and the Carters and the Richards and all of that. But the Jets have some pretty good players as well. So I think it lends to a lot of intrigue to how this game's going to be played out, and it might or may not answer any more questions that people have about the Jets in this conference, although it could. And if it doesn't, though, there'll be more questions about whether they are truly going to be contender for one of the top eight spots. But it's only game two, but I think that this will be indeed a good litmus test for Winnipeg coming up against a pretty good team.
You'll hear him on Friday night's broadcast as the Jets take on the LA Kings here on TSN 1290. Paul Edmonds, thanks very much for joining us this evening on NHL Midweek.
My pleasure, guys. Just one more thing that I'll always remember about that opener last night. I think it was a harbinger of things to come for the Edmonton Oilers in the third period when the fire alarm was going off in the second period there at Rexall Place.
Thanks very much, Paul. Take care, bud.
Hey, guys. See ya.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
20 minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to NHL Midweek with The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Big thank you to Paul Edmonds for having just joined us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download both on the TSN 1290 website as well as through our iTunes feed. Go to iTunes, search for Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Let's head back to the NHL Midweek Hotline.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
We welcome to NHL Midweek from NHL.com, Corey Massasek. Corey, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
We're doing very well. Thanks very much for joining us this evening. We're obligated to, by law, start with what everybody in the hockey world is talking about, and that's fighting in hockey. We all saw what happened yesterday in Montreal with the incident involving George Parros and everything else, and fortunately it sounds like he's going to be okay. Corey, do you think we're getting close to a sort of a critical mass and where fighting in hockey is on its way out?
I don't think I would say that at this point. I think, anytime there's a scary incident like what happened last night, it seems like, it seems like it's kind of pushes the discussion forward, but I don't know, like the reaction, like I feel like most of the reaction that's come from that from last night is very kind of black and white, and it's clearly a gray area. I don't think I'm, stepping out of bounds by saying that I'm not, I'm not a big fan of the stage fight. I'm still of the mind that, whenever it happens in the heat of the game, and if it's sticking up for a teammate or something like that, there's clearly a place for that at this point in time. And obviously there's been all this stuff about how all the players and everybody wants it to remain, but it seems like a lot of the argument that comes after a scary moment like that is very heated and very like, just, I don't know, it doesn't seem like it's really, I don't know if it really helps. The people are just kind of going by raw emotion. I think it's certainly plausible that, that someday, that it won't, there's obviously been parts of, hits, certain hits that have been kind of legislated out and things like that, though. But, obviously nobody wants to see what happened last night. And, I think there's been little tweaks here and there, like, the new rule about the helmets and, there's certainly ways that the people are kind of looking to go about, maybe eliminating some of the different types of fights.
Corey, for our listeners who aren't aware, you're based in New York City, and we wanted to talk to you a little bit about some of the teams in the Eastern Conference, and we might as well start off with the New York Rangers. For me, I'm still on the fence whether I think that the New York Rangers are going to be better. I still think they're a playoff team, but there are a lot of question marks for me, and when I see a guy like Chris Kreider, for example, sent down to the AHL, I wonder what the plan is there and what I think of that team. But sticking with the coaching, because that's the biggest change that was made, what kind of impact do you think Alain Vigneault is going to have on this team this year?
Yeah, I think it's certainly going to be the biggest storyline. There's certainly a scenario there where, the team just kind of feels like it's a fresh start, and obviously the things that they didn't like about John Tortorella, Alain Vigneault is, polar opposites almost from that guy. So, it's quite possible that, they'll rip off to a, 12-2-2 start, and everybody will be talking about how everyone loves Vigneault, and, the shackles are off, so they're scoring a bunch of goals, and they're not having to try to block every shot, and maybe that'll be the case, or, maybe they won't play as good a defense, and they'll struggle. I think top to bottom, I think they've got, a top three or top four roster in the Eastern Conference for sure. I think they're going to miss Carl Hagelin for a while, and I think he's pretty underrated. But top to bottom, they're pretty good. As long as Lundqvist is healthy, they're one of the best teams in the league. I think if anything, that was one of Tortorella's biggest issues, especially in the playoffs the past couple of years, is that maybe they didn't kind of, let the horses go a little bit in the playoffs whenever they had more talent than the team that they were playing.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. We're joined by Corey Massasak of NHL.com. Corey, moving across the Hudson River to New Jersey, sort of a two-part question I have for you regarding the Devils. Part one, are you surprised that the Devils aren't going with Martin Brodeur, in terms of the season opening start? It sounds like they're going with Corey Schneider when they open their season on Thursday. And then part two, have the Devils done enough improving their forward group and with the addition of Schneider in net to be a playoff contender, given that their defensive weaknesses on the back end?
I think so. I'll answer that one first. Well, let's put it this way. I'm doing our power rankings, starting up, kind of taking over for Dave Lozo in that role, and I have no. I'm basically going to say in the first power rankings on Friday on the site that I have no idea any of those teams beyond. I think Pittsburgh, Washington, and New York are all going to be pretty good. And then those other five teams in that division are, I think any of them could finish in fourth place. And I think any of them could finish in eighth place. That said, I think the Devils could end up being the best team out of that bunch, just because I think, people see that they've lost Parise, they've lost Kovalchuk, but, what they've added a few guys, I think getting Damian Brunner right at the end there, whenever they're healthy, they're going to have two and possibly three pretty decent lines. Now they're not going to have, like, you know, the just the dynamic game-breaking stuff that Kovalchuk and Parise have given them in the past. But I think they could be pretty solid. And, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, I think Corey Schneider and Martin Brodeur could be one of the best tandems in the league, especially if Martin Brodeur doesn't have to play 55 or 60 games anymore, which is obviously going to be the case. Now, the second part, I think, or the first part, I think Martin Brodeur had a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of something that he was dealing with in camp, you know, physically. And so, I mean, I saw that they mentioned that they maybe wanted to give him an extra day or two. I also think that those two are, at least at the beginning of the season, are going to pretty much have a 50-50 split, and they wanted to give Marty the home game. I mean, I think that was maybe, you know, maybe the two reasons that went into that.
Corey, the New York Islanders don't start the season until Friday. They're going to play the Devils, who play the Pittsburgh Penguins on Thursday. I think you'd agree that everybody agrees that the New York Islanders are for real, and especially taking the Pittsburgh Penguins to the amount of games that they did in the first round, even though they lost. They gave the Pittsburgh Penguins a pretty good run for their money. Do you think that they'll continue to take the next step, or do you think that they possibly take a step back? The only thing that I can think of maybe that you would look at possibly taking a step back is Mark Streit has gone to Philly and they haven't really replaced his offense. What do you think? What are you projecting the Islanders to do this year?
Yeah, they're another one of those teams where there's, I feel like it could go in five different directions. I mean, I think people are going to look and see how they played against the Penguins and assume that that's what's going to happen. I mean, I think you remember the Penguins had their first playoff trip where they got their lessons basically from the Senators, but they also played pretty well and then came back, you know, and then the rest was history the following years. I don't necessarily think that's going to happen for the Islanders, but I do think that, you know, they added a couple more guys like Pierre-Marc Bouchard is another one of those guys. I mean, if the biggest strength for Gar Snow is clearly just finding these guys who for cheap, who are able to outperform how much they pay them. And that's kind of a, you know, that's kind of the MO on Long Island. And I think he's going to be another guy who is going to fit right in with Molson and Tavares and play well for them. But you're right, the defense is a little suspect now. I mean, Griffin Reinhart, if he sticks with them and is really good, that could change things for them. They really like Matt Donovan, another kid coming along. I wasn't as surprised about Kreider going back to for the Rangers, actually, as I was that Ryan Strome got sent down by the Islanders. I really thought he was going to stick.
Yeah, me too.
I think they've got, you know, they've certainly got some depth. I mean, I think, you know, the past couple of years before last year, the biggest thing for the Islanders was they had a decent first 18 or 20 guys, but they would have two or three injuries and they were just shot. So I think, they've got three or four options. They've got Anders Lee, who's down in the minors too. I think they're going to get Cal Clutterbuck back eventually. I think they're a little deeper. You know, obviously they've got one of the, you know, five or six best players in the world, so that doesn't hurt. I mean, I think they're definitely going to be in that group that's fighting for one of the last two or three playoff spots in the East.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by NHL.com writer Corey Mastisak. We seem to be, just the way it worked out, focusing most of our attention on the Metropolitan Division. Staying there, moving to the city of brotherly love, and, you know, as he just mentioned, Mark Streit just got on the board with his first assist for the Islanders to put them up 1-0 over the
Flyers.
For the Flyers, putting them up 1-0 over the Toronto Maple Leafs. Looking at Philly, Corey, you know, we know that their offense is about as enviable as an offense as you can get in the NHL. Do they have enough defense and goaltending to get them into the playoffs, unlike last season?
I find that to be a very weird team because, first off, the offense, their forward group is quite loaded, but they didn't score enough last year. That was actually one of the problems for them. Brzgalov was actually pretty good, and they just didn't score enough at times until all the injuries hit and they just became a mess. So they actually need to score more than they did last year, which I think they can do. But secondly, they went, whatever it was, 30 years going cheap in goal, and they finally decided not to do that and gave all that money to Brzgalov. Well, that didn't work, so now they're back to going very cheap and, kind of unproven in goal. We'll see. Steve Mason had a few good games for them last year. Ray Emery had a few good games for Chicago. That could still be an issue for them. And then on defense, I think the cry from Flyers fans is they needed to get younger and faster, and they added Mark Streit and Hal Gill. So I don't know if that really addressed maybe they just decided they needed to get, you know, they just needed better players. And you know, Mark Streit is probably better than two or three of the guys they were running out last year, and Hal Gill has shown that he can still play a little bit. So, and he didn't cost a whole lot of money, which was big for them. So, yeah, I mean, I, you know, I think it's very plausible that all these teams, those three teams we just talked about, could finish a point or two away from each other by the end of the year.
Corey, the Washington Capitals lost their first game last night to the Chicago Blackhawks 6-4, and it wasn't the fault of Mikhail Grabowski, obviously. He got a hat trick and picked up an assist, and he's on pace for, let me check, I think 350 points, so it wasn't his fault, but he was one of the big acquisitions that they made. They lost Mike Ribeiro to the Phoenix Coyotes. What is your take on the Washington Capitals this year? Because it was another year where they didn't go to the Stanley Cup Finals. They didn't bring home the hardware. Is there any reason to believe that they're going to be better this year?
Yes, I think so. And it's weird, too, because I've seen a lot of preseason predictions that have felt they're going to go the other way. And I mean, there's plenty of reason to believe that, because they had a really weird year last year. I think, if anything, they benefited the most from just the weirdness that of the 48-game season. They started out terrible, but then they had a very soft finishing schedule, and they took advantage of it. And they, for the last 15 or 20 games of the season, they looked like world beaters. But again, who were they actually beating? All those questions. That said, I think Adam Oates is legitimately going to be a great coach in this league. Like, he's one of those guys where you spend a few days around him and you're just like, man, this guy gets it. He's gonna be really good at this. And I think having a full training camp with them, I think honestly having Grabowski, and granted he played on the fourth line last night and has already complained about his role, but I think Martin Erett is gonna be a good player for them. So I think basically taking the money that they would be spending on Alexander Semin right now and turning that into Grabowski and Erett kind of fills a hole that they didn't have filled before, and conversely makes them a little bit deeper. They really like Tom Wilson. I don't know how big of an impact he's going to have, but they're definitely deep up front. They've definitely got three really good defensemen and a whole bunch of who knows on the back, and Braden Holtby is pretty good. So I think that's enough, and the fact that their star players really started playing like star players again last year, I think. You saw even last night, Ovechkin, Backstrom, Green, all pretty good. It looked a little bit like they did a few years ago when they would win game 6-4, lose game 6-4, and maybe that's not the worst thing in the world. Maybe they just get back to being that entertaining team that racks up a bunch of points, and then we can all debate whether or not they're going to be good enough in the playoffs again or not.
They certainly would be entertaining. Corey, we'll let you go on this last question. We do it every time we sort of preview a conference or preview a division with a guest. Got to have your predictions for the Eastern Conference, the Western Conference, and your cup winner.
Oh, boy. Who did I say? We just ran ours on our website the other day, and I already forgot. I think the Los Angeles Kings will defeat the Detroit Red Wings in the Stanley Cup Final.
We did our predictions on Saturday on the show. That was the exact same prediction I had. So hopefully we'll both be right.
I think if anybody reads the power rankings on Friday, they're going to see that I'm pretty high on Detroit, obviously.
Well, they're up.
One thing's for sure, Corey, wherever the Jets are ranked, I think that we're going to be debating that all day on this station, because anytime a player is ranked by NHL.com, we seem to debate it. So it's going to be fun to have those debates all year.
Yeah, hey, they got off to a good start. And you know what? I actually I got to spend maybe 10 or 15 minutes with Jacob Trouba one day, and actually two different days. And the kid's great. I love just a very personable, just a good kid. And that was about as good of an NHL debut as you could have. So.
And in terms of your predictions, the Red Wings are already up 2-0 on the Buffalo Sabres with 7 minutes to go in the first period in Detroit. Corey Massasak from NHL.com, thanks very much for joining us this evening on NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, anytime. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Corey. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Corey.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and tsn1290.ca.